This is Talk is Cheap on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, with the final installment of the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference coming up. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. All right, this is my final installment of the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference of 2022. This is on Central American countries that are forced to get their economies going by exporting trees. And China is a major player in this that we have to hopefully stop. So you're going to hear a bit about that. First, I have some stuff from accuracy.org on what is really causing inflation, because the Fed raising interest rates has never worked. And you can go to, you might want to read William Grider's Secrets of the Temple if you want to know more about this, that basically they just do it to cause unemployment, and that's what eventually lowers prices, which is really heavy-handed and doesn't work, and what they should be doing is using Keynesian economics. So next week, Alan White, the drummer of Yes, and also from Plastic Ono Band, died recently, so I'm going to do a tribute to him, and then I will have some stuff, more stuff on climate change from the Citizens Climate Lobby, because we need to keep our eye on the ball and the most important thing right now is climate change and Keynesian spending to provide jobs to correct, to retool and get us off fossil fuels and correct the climate change problem and get us over to renewables. That's what we need to be doing. That's what will win the Democrats the election and stop a fascist economy. By the way, in my own opinion, what I think is going to happen is they will convict Donald Trump for fraud, but that will work in his favor, and he, because you can work, you can be elected by, you know, Eugene Debs ran for president from prison. So you can run as a felon, you can still run for president. So I think that's what's, what you may see. Hopefully not. But yeah, if the Democrats don't take care of the middle class by providing jobs and moving to a new economy, a Keynesian renewable economy, you will see the rise of fascism, just like in Nazi Germany and other countries, like it has done before. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. This is from accuracy.org. A new paper has been released saying that corporate profits play a central role in causing inflation. Servaz Storm is senior lecturer of economics at Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. His Inflation in the Time of Corona and War has just been published by the Institute for New Economic Thinking in New York. Storm writes in his new paper, quote, "The non-financial corporate profits per unit of real GDP have increased from 10.8% in 2020 quarter two to 15.6% in 2021 quarter three during the corona period. Nominal growth of corporate profits by 35% during 2021 has vastly outstripped nominal increases in the compensation of employees, which is 10%, as well as the personal consumption expenditure inflation rate, which is 6.1%. According to the Wall Street Journal, nearly two out of three of the biggest U.S. publicly traded companies had larger profit margins this year than they did in 2019 prior to the pandemic. Nearly 100 of these corporations did report profits in 2021 that are 50% above profit margins from 2019. Evidence from corporate earnings calls shows that CEOs are boasting about their, quote, pricing power, meaning the ability to raise prices without losing customers. Even the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, has weighed in on this issue, stating that large corporations with near monopolistic market power are, quote, raising prices because they can. These profit increases have contributed to a process of profit price inflation. This is an article from accuracy.org. Fed's fix is wrong. Inflation caused by skyrocketing corporate profits more than wages. By Pia Mullaney. Mullaney is senior economist at the Institute for New Economic Thinking. She said today, as the White House and Jerome Powell meet this week to discuss the highest inflation in decades, the Fed chair has been explicit about the Fed's monetary policy goals, quote, to get wages down and then get inflation down. The labor market has indeed been tight, with wages rising at the highest price in years, especially at the lower end of the wage distribution. But is this the major driving force of rising inflation? Work by Servaz Storm for the Institute for New Economic Thinking and other analysts suggests that very little of the rise in inflation can be traced to wages. As most Americans know from their own experience, wages are running well behind inflation and have been for many months. What is skyrocketing is corporate profits. As numerous studies indicate, economic concentration in the U.S. has increased oligopoly power in several industries, allowing corporations to raise prices and profits. The latest flap about baby food is a perfect example. The industry is highly concentrated. Quote, the plain fact is that import prices from supply shortages and other problems explain a great deal of the rise in American prices, but that is hardly responsive to Fed interest rate rises. In any way, interest rates are, at best, a blunt tool. Empirical evidence has shown that historically it requires very large increases in interest rates to bring down inflation, even by small percentages, with enormous costs to employment and growth, close quote from Savas Storm. Okay, so I'm only going to play you the first half of this lecture on Central America, because the second half is basically just for lawyers. So this features Josie Salev, who is the global architecture project manager at the Nature Conservancy. She's based in Rio de Janeiro. Josie's got 20 years of experience in Latin America, ranging from private sector operations to managing large environmental nonprofit projects. Before joining the Nature Conservancy, she was responsible for managing Sony Music Entertainment's multi-billion dollar operations budget for Brazil under the Nature Conservancy's global priority to provide food and water sustainability. She oversees a multidisciplinary team based in Brazil, Argentina, the United States, and London. She provides strategic oversight of the Nature Conservancy's flagship project to eliminate deforestation in South America.
Josie holds a master's degree in environmental strategy with a focus on stakeholder relationships from Instituto Brasil de Mercado de Capitales, and a master of business administration degree, also from Brazil. So I will now turn everything over to Josie and Raquel. Looking forward to the presentation.
Thank you, Edward. Well, I think you have said plenty about us. I will just say a little bit more about TNC, since both Josie and I work for the Nature Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy is a global environmental organization headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, United States. It has operations in 79 countries, as well as across every state in the United States. With that said, I don't want to say anything else about us. I just want to introduce our agenda. This is our agenda today. We'll be speaking today about the global commodity trade dynamic and its impact to deforestation. After a very interesting conservation presentation by my friend Josie, we will address legal considerations, the most common type of agreements in the money out phase of the project. That's where I work more closely with my clients. I help them to spend the money and make the magic happens in Latin America. And the role of the in-house counsel at a nonprofit organization. That being said, I will let Josie start our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Thanks, Edward, for the warm welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here talking more about these commodities world to all of you. I'd like to start my presentation with this combination of the keywords here. Trees, agriculture, population growth, climate, and business. Although seems very different things at a first glance, they are centered and connected through the global commodity supply chain. So in the next slides, I will present to all of you a bit of some of those challenges and connection among all of that. So the picture, this beautiful picture that you are seeing here is an aerial view of São Félix do Xingu. It's a municipality in the heart of the Brazilian Amazon, which is an area very impacted by the deforestation caused by the commodity supply chain, especially in beef in that case. So the reason why I chose this picture is really to illustrate why tropical forests matter so much to the world. So tropical forests harbor some of the world's highest biodiversity and carbon stocks, making them really essential for conservation and the mitigation of climate risk. So the same landscapes are often home to diverse cultures and peoples who have inhabited and used the forest for generations. So this is why it's so important that. Now, I want to show you some data so you can better understand the challenges in the commodities dynamics. So first of all, tropical forest loss remains at high rates, and several factors drive forest loss, including agriculture, forestry, wildfire, and urbanization. But agriculture expansion is the dominant direct cause of the deforestation in the tropics. There are many trade-offs with the agriculture supply chain, particularly in South America. So I'll, you know, just present a few of those. So from one side, from the positive side, agriculture commodity is really an important driver of exports and employment. In South America, it represents 15% of total employment. As a reference for you, the OECD countries has an average of 4.9%. So it's very significant, the employment for the South America countries. Also in South America, Brazil has a leading role, being the major export of soy and beef in the world, and it's highly dependent on the foreign soybean market. So in the demand side, China is really a protagonist of that, being the major importer of soy and beef in the world. So as you can see, the dynamic between these two countries are very relevant from an economic standpoint for the country. But there is also, of course, the other side of the coin, which is the negative impact for the biodiversity. Although soy and beef are the main drivers of the deforestation in South America, I want you to know that there are other forest risks commodities, such as cocoa, coffee, wood fiber, and palm oil, especially very notable in Indonesia, the deforestation. So in 20 years, more than 60 million of hectares of habit of primary forests have been lost. So to give you a more concrete representation of what that this means, you can think of the size of France. So this is how much we already lost over the past 20 years. Although I mentioned about Brazil, I also want you to know that three major biomes in South America have a large scale commercial agriculture production system that is very integrated to the global commodities market. Amazon Cerrado in Brazil, as I mentioned, but also Gran Chaco in Argentina and Paraguay. So those are the main players in South America for commodities. While the current tropical deforestation situation is really concerning, the future trends are really uncertain. So one major driver of this uncertainty is the fact that the global population is rising. So it's estimated that 1.8 billion of people could join the middle class by 2030. So the effect of that is in the direct shifts through increases in protein consumption may happen with rising incomes. So an important factor is on that increase is that this increase in middle population is estimated to happen in Asia, particularly in Asia. So this means that the demand for forest risk commodities, especially beef and soy, can increase to attend the world food consumption. So and this, of course, can lead to more deforestation if we continue with the business as usual model. So doing a zooming in the soy, we can say that in the past 10 years, the demand for soybeans grew by 101%, two times more the growth of the overall agriculture sector, and four times the growth of the overall population. So this is really a lot. And the growth of the soybean is has been underpinned by its critical importance as a source of protein for animal feed. So 70% of the harvest soy is processed into soy meal, and almost 100% of the soy meal is used for animal feed. So beef, poultry, pork. So the soy is really relevant to the as a commodity to the world. So based on these historical trends, you can imagine that the future can be worse if nothing changes, right? Now, a positive message that I wanted to leave to you is that it is possible to reach agriculture growth, develop and attend the world food consumption of both soy and beef commodities that is deforestation free. So conservation and production are not really at odds with each other. So a better normal is possible really. So a lot of our NGOs allies beat the drum on no deforestation. Although 14C, this is really our objective, TNC has a more pragmatic narrative to the market actors, which is more propositive, which means that we use more science to show companies that there is more than double the area of suitable lands that have already been cleaned in the forest to meet future demands through regenerative agriculture, intensification of the yields. So agribusiness can continue really grow strategically by strategically expand into those areas that were already deforested, was already cleared. So this is a really a perfect example of win-win to both sides. Also, we don't tell to the banks that they needed to convert all their financial products to have green conditions. What we tell them is that there is a growing opportunity for new products that support these increased market demands for conservation-free production. And we definitely don't tell the Chinese government that they need to ban imports with deforestation. What we do instead is to use the Chinese think tankers to do research and influence policymakers on the importance of guaranteeing long-term food access to feed 1.4 billion people that will join the middle class by ensuring that the productivity from those producing countries are not affected by climate change caused by deforestation. So this is our narrative to the market actors to show the importance or the benefits of the deforestation free to the market. And of course, finally, I wanted to say that the Europe and other key demand countries also have an important role in that space, advancing with regulation, boundary trade action to ban the imported deforestation products. Now I'll talk about a little bit about the risks of the deforestation and the supply chains. And this is where usually the attorneys, perhaps one of you in the future, comes to help the sustainability and the commercial areas in the companies to figure out and to discuss about all of those risks when they are involved in the commodities. So the material risk of deforestation in supply chain changes the assumptions related to companies' revenues growth drivers, operational costs, profitability, litigation risks, and cash flow generation. So for example, local changes in climate may reduce agricultural yields, in turn reducing companies' profits. A company's brand reputation may be negatively affected by being directly or indirectly associated with deforestation and exploitation of local people's rights, and even through their supplies, not necessarily they directly involved. So those risks have the potential to cause higher operation costs to the company, lower margins, price volatility for investee companies. So among many other operational risks. So now connecting the deforestation with the climate change, one important thing for you to know is that the forests in the tropicals has a unique role as they are rich to store carbon. So addressing deforestation driven by agricultural commodities is really critical to achieve the transition to a low carbon economy and meeting the international ambition to prevent the warming beyond the 1.5 degrees Celsius to the degrees Celsius. Often cited as the uppermost limits that our planet can handle. So forest degradation accounts for approximately 10 to 15% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. So it's not the whole thing, but it contributes to a part of that emission. So when a forest is cleared, we are not only knocking our best ally, capturing the staggering amount of GHGs, but also we are creating emissions by cutting down the trees. So we have the two sides. In 2017, TNC led a very interesting study that and found that the land sector has the potential to deliver up to one third of the cost-effective mitigation needed by 2030 to hold the global warming below the 2 degrees Celsius. So this mitigation strategy was called by Tennessee as natural climate solutions. So avoided forest conversion is one of those viable natural climate solutions. So deforestation is really deforestation-free is really important on that context of the climate change risk as well. Now I'll talk a bit about the role of retailers and brands in this commodity dynamic. So probably you already heard about a retailer or a brand like Nestle and many others announcing their commitments on zero deforestation. But they are brands and retailers who buy from someone, right? Who buy from their suppliers. So for them to implement those commitments, they need their suppliers to act, to also implement some type of zero conversion commitments and act on that. So in that regard, we are seeing really an increasing pressure from retailers and brands in the world on their midstream suppliers. So in case of the soy and beef, we are talking about the grain traders, companies, and the meat packers to deliver zero conversion soy and beef. However, the timetables for implementation of deforestation and conversion-free commitments are really not aggressive enough given the speed of habitat conversion that is happening in Brazilian Cerrado and Argentinian Chaco. So, and there are three main reasons behind of that, why they are slowing, why they are delaying to the implementation of their commitments. The first message that I wanted to leave with you is the importance of China in changing the rules of the game. As we have seen previous slides, China is the number one importer of the soy and beef in the world. So dominance in the world trade means China can set de facto standards. If China sends a demand sign that they want to, they desire only zero deforestation soy and beef, they can really have a huge shift, a huge role in shifting the global market. So a China demand sign can generate very quick and significant conservation outcomes. But the reality is that today China have little to no environment requirements on their imports. So the traders and meat packers really are sitting comfortably knowing that their major market is currently satisfied with the business as usual, right? With products with no with deforestation. The second one point is the commercial imperative to shift the models to deforestation conversion free are not compelling enough. So this gap really provides ample cover for companies to delay their effective implementation on DCF commitments. And finally, the soy traders and meat packers justify their slowness to change the business as usual model with the low margin of the commodity. So those are the reasons why they are, you know, delay and postponement that. Next slide, thanks. Now, this circle represents a simplification version of the pool of stakeholders involved in the commodity supply chain dynamic. So here we have NGOs, we have the finance sector, we have the traders, we have the meat packers, we have the producers, producer country, demand sides, among many other players. So this circle wants to say that the outlook of forestry positive solutions for a deforestation-free commodity supply chain can only be achieved through collective action and collaboration across geographies, sectors, stakeholders, both within and beyond the supply chains. Over the past decade, particularly in recent years, the community of action has recognized and has found new ways of working together. So in the private sector, for instance, companies are joining forces through sector-specific efforts, such as platform as the Consumer Good Forum, Soft Commodities Forum, among many other platforms that exist, to agree on a collective target and engage more deeply with other stakeholders. in producing countries, emerging multi-stakeholder initiatives that engage local governments and produces at landscape scale have started to show promises. And we do have a case in São Félix do Xingu that TNC is working that demonstrates that this beginning. The finance sector also has begun to recognize the role they play in decreasing in finance of commodity production linked to deforestation and increase the flow of capital towards sustainable commodity production. And the civil society as well also played an important role in enhancing transparency, providing tools and accountability. And we also have other NGOs allies who are more towards to advocacy campaigns that also plays a role in the society and on that. However, these efforts are still nascent and there is a significant opportunity to build on this momentum and increase the pre-competitive collaboration. So this diagram, we believe that will create really a system change in the global commodity dynamic in the upcoming years if it, this moves forward more. Examples. Now, a good example that I want to bring it to you about the mobilization between civil society, private sector, and demand country that delivered a lasting solution to deforestation attributed to soy in the Amazon is the what we call the Amazon soy moratorium. To explain a bit to the context, historically, deforestation for soy was hovering around 120,000 hectares a year until 2005, with significant concerns that it was going to increase even more with increased global demands and high soybean prices. So in 2006, when the Amazon soy moratorium was created, we saw a huge decrease of nearly 70% in deforestation for soy and continued decrease in maintaining minimal levels of deforestation for soy. So in this graphic here, you see this big drop when the moratorium, the soy moratorium came. So this is a key message that I want to share with you, the power of a voluntary market agreement for the commodities world. What this graph doesn't show is that market agreements are effective despite of powerful externalities. From 2007 to 2012, global soybean prices were booming. Global growth in population and in income, increasing biofuel production and depreciation of the US dollar, any farmer anywhere in the world had a significant financial incentive to plant as much soybean as possible wherever he possibly could. Also, this graphic also doesn't show that these markets agreements don't happen overnight. So it was really a 5 years process that took until the soy moratorium place that started with conversations between TNC and Cargill, a major soybean company, when they opened a grain terminal to ship soy down from the Amazon River. And this culminated with a Greenpeace campaign in Europe against soy traders and McDonald's chicken nuggets feed on soy from the Amazon. So this was a huge movement that happened by that time. With that, the soy moratorium was created. So also there was a big improvement in the command control against illegal deforestation in the country by the Brazilian government as well. But the soy moratorium still have gaps. We acknowledge that as the deforestation in Amazon are still high, although they maintain like somehow flat, but are still high, but they dramatically change as we saw in this graphic due to these voluntary agreements. And what we expect to see at some point is that other voluntary market agreements happens also for the Cerrado and Chaco and the Gran Chaco as well. Now, talking more specifically about TNC's focus on the zero conversion commodity strategy, There are a lot of different nonprofit organizations working this space as well. And TNEC has a long history of working with agriculture and food companies and producers to make their supply chains more sustainable. But it wasn't until 2014 with the launch of New York Declaration on Forests that this really started to be a more comprehensive strategy at TNEC to combat tropical deforestation by working more broadly and systemically with market actors to help them implement their corporate commitments to zero deforestation. At TNEC's zero conversion commodity strategy, we focus on four main things. First, in engaging directly with companies and their industry groups to credibly implement their deforestation free commitments. Also, having the data and platforms available so companies can make smart decisions in their sourcing based on that, based on that information. Also, increase volume, variety in terms of producers' incentives and green loans and investments. And finally, some targeted policy work, particularly in China, with the work with the think tanks and Chinese university on research and science data. So those areas are underpinned by our foundational work at TNEC, which is refining guidance for sectors to have clear rules and expectations, boots on the ground projects in key geographies that sustain our credibility in global forums and test innovative elements and influence industry leaders through targets communication piece. TNEC also has other complementary strategies that work on deforestation and conversion fronts, like small-scale family farming and indigenous community. But I just highlighted the specifically work of the strategy that I work for, which is the zero conversion commodity strategy. Yeah, I think I'll close the a better normal is really possible and. You know, I want to close my part of the presentation saying, yes, this is possible. And there are reasons to believe the COP26 can be a turning point for us. So the COP, the Conference of the Parties, is a major annual global event where member countries of the United Nations Climate Change Convention come together to debate and make decisions on the rules of the game for keeping global warming to under 2 degrees Celsius. So between October and November of last year was held the COP26 in Glasgow. And for the first time ever in the history of the climate COPs, nature took front stage as an important contributor in the equation, keeping the world under the 2 degrees of global warming. So also it was the first time that the deforestation narrative was more explicitly embedded into the climate change risks. So this is always very positive. So several pledges, commitments were made by countries, by the finance sector, by the soy and beef supply chain, by brands. I mean, several commitments were made. But one that I would like to highlight is the ambitious 19 billion of public and private commitments to halt and revert deforestation by 2030. That was made with the signature of more than 140 countries, including China and Brazil, which is very important, relevant to have China sign this type of agreement. So this is a huge and a very important step towards to that. Of course, the society will be watching, the civil society, of course, will be also following up very close how those pledges and commitments will be deployed over the years. To become a reality. And I think the next COP in November of this year, there will be more pressure to see some advances from the society that the markets or all those actors did in the past COP.
Buzzes, we have a few buzzes. What we'd like to do is to play side one of Relayer for you. the gates of delirium. Fight with you, consider reminded of an inner pact between us that's seen as we go. And right there, emotion to feels in debts of honor. Stand the marchers, soaring talents, peaceful lives will not deliver freedom. Fighting we know, destroy oppression. Point to action as leaders look to you, attacking. Choose and renounce, throwing chains to the floor. Kill or be killing, that's the sins correct. In screams of anguish, past men fashion bespoils our soul achiever. Surely we know. In glory, we rise to offer, create our freedom, a word we utter, a word. Words close our banner, victory. Silence we promise as violence disclosed.
the sun. Our lives there in silence. Help us now. The sun.
Hey.